Segula occurs 8 times in the Old Testament. The Hebrew word segula occurs 8 times in the Old Testament. We've read the first and the last time it appears. It comes 3 times in Deuteronomy and once in the Psalms, where this emphasis on God's choice of his people is repeated. We'll come to the other two appearances later. I want to stress, first of all, I do not know any Hebrew. I know there may be one or two among you who may read a bit of Hebrew. I do not. I cannot understand the beautiful pictorial letters of the Hebrew script. But I have a concordance at home, written in the 19th century, laboriously, where some professor listed every word in the authorized version of the Bible, in the Hebrew and the Greek, and gave all the various shades of meaning. So I can look up words, and I find it fascinating to look up words there. And I find that segula occurs 8 times. I want to look, first of all, at this passage in Exodus 19. And we look again at verse 4. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Thank you, Julian. They were redeemed. They were saved. Thank you. I was brought up in my youth in the Christian group I was taught by that in the Bible, Egypt is a type or picture of the world and its systems against God. The world in its idolatry and its worship of not necessarily idols or gods, but other things. The Apostle John, in his epistle, he describes very clearly the world. Love not the world, he says, or the things that are in the world. For the things that are in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, are not of the Father, but they're of the world. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, or as the NIV puts it, the ostentation of living. And it's very interesting when you compare that with what happened in Genesis 3 in the Garden of Eden. Do you remember that Eve saw that the tree was good for food, the lust of the flesh. It was good to look upon, the lust of the eyes. It was a tree to be desired to make one wise, the pride of life. And the seeds of worldliness were there right at the very beginning in the Garden of Eden as Eve was tempted and fell, and Adam fell. But here God has brought his people out of Egypt. He's saved them out of the world. He's redeemed them. They have been redeemed. And then God says, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. They were redeemed, they were treasured. Treasured by God for him and his purpose. And all the way through the Old Testament, it's quite clear that God treasured his people, even though they went away from him at times. God treasured them. They were his treasured possession. And for what purpose? Although the whole earth is mine, said God, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. They were commissioned to his service. Redeemed, treasured, and commissioned. Commissioned to be a kingdom of priests. The Voice translation, I have a Bible Gateway also, somebody sent me a few years ago, and I've kept it on my database. I have access to scores of different translations of the Bible. It's quite extraordinary. But the Voice translation adds a comment here. As a kingdom of priests, Israel exists to serve as agents of God's blessing. The people are to bear witness to God's character and to carry to God the world's concerns. They say that a prophet is someone who speaks to the people on behalf of God, and a priest is someone who speaks to God on behalf of the people. And God commissioned his people Israel to be a nation of priests, a royal priesthood. And the people were to take to him the world's concerns. Sadly, they failed in this. Although there were long periods when they served God, long periods when they followed him, but there were repeated cycles of going astray and abandoning their original mission. By New Testament times, the Jewish people had become very insular, very self-centered. The things of God were for them, were for Israel, and not for the Gentiles. And when in Acts 22, Paul, talking to a group of Jews, tells them that God gave him a vision and said he was going to send him to the Gentiles, they went mad, shouting, "Rid the earth of him, he's not fit to live," throwing earth and their cloaks in the air. But it was, you see, God had planned that he should send his people out to the Gentiles. Look at what he says now in 1 Peter chapter 2. Thank you, Julian. 1 Peter chapter 2. "You are," he says, "a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God." And if you've got a copy of the new NIV, you will see it says God's special possession. I like the Authorized Version. It says there, "You are a peculiar people." Now we use the word peculiar to mean odd or strange. Do you know, at school we used to say something, "Oh, that's a funny thing, isn't it?" And somebody would say, "Do you mean funny ha-ha or funny peculiar?" We think of peculiar as strange. Actually, when the Bible was translated, peculiar meant something special, something particular, something for that person. And God says, here, Peter says here, you are, and he's talking now, not to special Christians, he's talking to Christian people scattered over what is now Turkey, over a wide area. You can read about the areas where he wrote to at the beginning of his epistle. And he says, "You're a people belonging to God. You're God's special possession. You're a peculiar people." Actually, in the 19th century in Southeast Essex, there was somebody who took this very literally and set up a series of churches. It spread quite a lot over Southeast Essex, and they called themselves the Peculiar People. And it was based on this verse. It was. They were peculiar people. They were very simple, a bit like the Open Brethren. They practiced baptism by immersion. They practiced faith healing. Of course, in the 19th century, doctors were pretty useless in what they did. They practiced faith healing. They practiced, I think, speaking in tongues. Certainly, they had no paid ministers. It was a very simple worship. And it spread. I think they've changed their name now to Evangelical People. I think people misunderstand peculiar people. But this is what God is saying. We are peculiar to him, peculiar to God, special, God's special people. And for what purpose? That you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. That's God's purpose for us. Now, in my Bible Gateway, I have also the Orthodox Jewish Bible translation. Very interesting. And it has a mixture. When you read it through, it's fascinating to see a mixture of English and Hebrew words. Of course, the Hebrew words have been transliterated into English so that we can read them, even if we don't necessarily understand them. Although I do find some words actually very fascinating to see there. But what does the Orthodox Jewish Bible say? Thank you, Julian. "You are," it says, "a chosen people, a kingdom of priests or royal priests, a holy nation, an am segula." There's that word again. An am segula, a people of treasured possession. And the translation there includes those two passages we've read, Exodus 19 and Malachi 3. And it actually says, "For this purpose, that you may declare the wondrous deeds of the one who gave you the calling and summoned you out of darkness into his marvelous light." He gave you the calling. Do you remember those times at school, games afternoon, when the teacher would choose two people to form two teams, and they would select alternately from the class. And how do you remember standing there wishing that your name would be called? How did you feel? And how did you feel when you were last? Or how did you feel perhaps when you were not called? Or perhaps just tagged on because nobody really wanted you? Listen, God has called you. He's given you the calling. You and me, we have been called. Here's a story of a man who was called by God. And he said no. I find this amazing. Sue was reading this book, 40 Days with Jesus, and he came across this description from Duncan Bannatyne. I think I've read this before in a sermon. Duncan Bannatyne, many of you will know from Dragon's Den. For me, he said in his biography, for me the tears came at about 10 o'clock that night. My face was wet, my nose began to run, and I was a mess. After many minutes, I began to get the feeling I wasn't alone. It was there that God said, hello. I felt I had been consumed by this presence, that something had completely shrouded and taken hold of me. It was unmistakable. I knew who had come. I also knew why. It wasn't a spiritual thing. It was a Christian thing. I felt I was being told, you've arrived. Join the faith. Be a Christian. This is it. It was profound. I stood there stunned, considering the offer and thinking about what it would mean. I knew I wanted to keep on making money, and I also knew I wanted to keep on doing all the things I was proud of. I knew I was never going to be this totally Christian guy going to church on Sundays. I said, no, I'm not ready. And God said, okay, and disappeared. The writer says, when I read this about Duncan Bannatyne, I almost cried. Because I feel I've gotten to know the man after watching him on TV. My heart and prayers went out for him and for his eternal destiny. For he just turned down the offer of life with Jesus because of the love of money and fame. We'll come back to that in a minute too. But notice this. You have been given a calling. Sorry, I've lost my notes now. You have been given a calling. If God has called you, respond positively and accept him. But what about the service? God has called you to a service. Not just called you to be his, he's called you to service. Listen to how Eugene Peterson puts that verse in Peter. Thank you, Julian. You are the ones chosen by God, chosen for the high calling of priestly work, chosen to be a holy people, God's instruments to do his work and speak out for him. Some years ago, we were at a conference in Hialeah, and there was a lady there leading us. And she said to us halfway through, she said, I want you all, as you sit there, to look at your hands. Now, it's very strange when I do this. Hardly anybody moves. Somehow, people can't bring themselves to hold up their hands and look at them. I ask you, look at your hands now. These are the hands that God uses to do his work. These are the hands that God uses to do his work. You are chosen to be a holy people, God's instruments to do his work and speak out for him, to tell others of the night and day difference to be made for you, from nothing to something, from rejected to accepted. That's the commission. That's what we've been chosen to do. So I ask you, how do you rate for one chosen for priestly work? Does your life bear witness to God's character? Do you take to him the issues of the world? How do you pray over news items? When you read the newspaper or listen to... Tom, can you turn it down a little bit? Because it's just echoing a lot. Do you listen... When you listen to the news and Read the newspaper. Do you pray over the issues? We can pray over great things. We can pray for the government. We can pray that they'll have wisdom. We all think we know what the wisdom is. If only we could be there in government, we'd tell them what to do, wouldn't we? Just a couple of weeks ago, a lad of 13 or 14, drowned off the pier at Clacton. And last week at Frinton Church, where we were, they prayed for his family. Do you pray over things that you read in the newspaper? Do you pray over the news? Do you take these concerns and these things to God? How do you rate as one chosen for priestly work? Now, we look quickly at the Malachi passage, the last chapter, last but one chapter in the Bible. Thank you, Julian. Notice the first thing in verse 16. Those who feared the Lord talked with each other, and the Lord listened and heard. Note this. When we talk to each other, the Lord listens and hears. What kind of things do you talk about when you meet other Christians? Sure, we live our lives. We have ordinary lives. They're secular things. We share what's happened to us. Do you talk about Christian things ever? Do you share what your reading was in the morning? Did you have a reading and a verse stood out for you and you thought, isn't that wonderful? I've never seen that before. I must share that with somebody. Do you share that? Do you talk about that? What do you talk about in your prayer meetings? In life groups and house groups? What do you talk about? Remember that God is listening, God is hearing. Is he pleased with what you say, or is he saddened? But then, you see, read on. A scroll of remembrance was written in his presence concerning those who feared the Lord and honoured his name. When I read that, I thought, gosh, that's remarkable. A scroll of remembrance was written. And it reminded me of the place, the end of the New Testament. This is the last book of the Old Testament and the last but one chapter. What about the last but one chapter in the New Testament? Revelation 21. It talks there about the New Jerusalem. And it talks there about the Lamb's Book of Life. And entry into the New Jerusalem is dependent on your name being written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Are you written in it? Are you included in the scroll of remembrance? Looking around here, I think I know that everyone has been recorded there in that book. Just in case, though, you have to have faith in the Lord Jesus Christ as Saviour. Pray the prayer summed up in the, from the Alpha Course. Sorry, thank you, please. Lord, I'm so sorry for my sins. I'm sorry for the wrong I've done. I'm sorry for the way I've gone. Thank you for dying for me on the cross. Please come into my heart. Please come into my life. Please accept me. Have you ever prayed that prayer? You have to get your name written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Let me give you an example. The London City Mission is one of the charities, Christian charities, that I support. And a couple of years ago, they were celebrating their 175th anniversary. And they had a celebration in one of the rooms in the House of Lords. And I received an invitation to go. They're the House of Lords, and my name, I thought, this is great, I'm going to go. I've never been in the House of Lords, never been inside those austere buildings. And I thought, I'm going to go. It's a great opportunity. But I had to do something. I had to contact them, and I had to say to them, I want to go. And they would write my name in their book on their list. Now, supposing I didn't do that, supposing I thought, well, I've got this invitation, all I've got to do is to go along, present it at the door, and I'm sure they'll let me in. But what would have happened? I would have got there, and they'd have looked at the invitation, and they would have said, looked in their book, see the name, not there. I'm sorry, your name isn't in the book, you can't come in. Do you want to go to heaven? Want to be with the Lord? Your name has to be written in the Lamb's Book of Life. It has to be written on the scroll of remembrance. It's a bit like having going to the doctor, isn't it? You go to the doctor and you see him and he gives you a prescription. Now you might think that this doctor is a tremendous guy or lady. Fantastic. Very friendly, open, knows his job or her job. And they seem to know the diagnosis and the treatment, I'm sure, is going to be effective. And you look at the prescription and you think, well, perhaps that's the right stuff. I'm sure it will because I trust the doctor. But unless you do something, unless you take it to the chemist and get the medication and take the medication, that consultation would have been a waste of time. God has given you the invitation. You need to respond. And what does he say further down? They will be mine, says the Lord Almighty, in the day when I make up my treasured possession. My treasured possession. Thank you, Julian. I like the Authorized Version. They will be mine, says the Lord of hosts, in the day when I make up my jewels. There's a song we used to sing when I was a boy from Sankey's. You remember some of you, one or two of you will remember Sankey's Sacred Songs and Solos. I looked it up, number 77. When he cometh to make up his jewels, all his jewels, precious jewels, he's loved and his own. Like the stars of the morning, his brightness adorning, they shall shine in their beauty, bright gems for their crown, for his crown. We are, God has made us his jewels, his treasured possession. If you have responded, and if you have come to God, you will be his treasured possession, his special jewel. Now, very quickly, our time has gone. I did say there were two other places where Segula is mentioned. One is in Ecclesiastes. And this is Solomon speaking in Ecclesiastes. We believe Solomon was the king who wrote the book. But listen to what he says here, chapter 2, verse 8. I amassed silver and gold for myself, and the treasure of kings. Now the Authorized Version there says the peculiar treasure of kings, but the Hebrew word actually is segula. It's the same word. Special, peculiar treasure, special treasure. And the treasure of kings and promises. I acquired male and female slaves, singers, and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I denied myself nothing, my eyes desired. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after wind. What is your treasured possession? What is it that you obsess your life with? What fills your life? Things? Finances? Status? Just 10 days ago, I read this newspaper I read. There was an article. It was about a celebrity woman who died. I have to say, I'd never heard the lady's name before, although some people who move in celebrity circles or take note of who the celebrities are, maybe she meant something. But she died in her late 50s, and the writer of the article thought it was a bit soon that she died. She was a bit too young to die. And she'd had a difficult life, apparently. Despite her celebrity status and everything that went with it. But this is what he wrote, and I copied out this from the article. For all the surface glamour of this gilded, glittering set, it wasn't just her, it was maybe those around her, the family. For all the surface glamour of this gilded, glittering set, misery was never far from the surface, a vein of darkness running through that would prove too much for several of its key players. A vein of darkness running through that would prove too much for several of its key players. Rather, isn't it, that we set our mind on things above? The Apostle Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4, finishes the chapter, the things that are seen are temporal, the things that are unseen are eternal. As an Irish nurse once said to me, there are no pockets in shrouds. Can't take anything with you. Nothing of material what we have in Colossians 3. Since you have been raised with Christ, set your mind on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. That's where our treasure should be. That's where our heart should lie. Not on things. Solomon found the things that he amassed. And he was a person who amassed massive things. And that he found that it was all meaningless. All a chasing after wind. We need to know the truth of God. Now the other place that Segula is mentioned is in 1 Chronicles 29. Towards the end of 1 Chronicles, David is an old man and he's soon to die. He wanted to build a temple, but God said, no, it's not for you to build a temple. Your son, Solomon, he'll build a temple. But David, in his controlling manner, he managed to collect together. He bought the site for the temple from Orona the Jebusite, who was a wealthy businessman, not even an Israelite. But David bought the site. Actually, the story of how he bought it is very interesting. You can read it a few chapters before 1 Chronicles 29. And Orona wanted to give it to David. David said these well-known, his famous words, I will not take what is yours for the Lord, and nor will I make a sacrifice that costs me nothing. And so David paid 600 shekels of gold for this field. And then he collected his stuff together. And what does he say here? Besides, in my devotion to the temple of my God, I now give my personal treasures. And actually, in the Hebrew, it's that same word, segula. I give my personal treasures of gold and silver for the temple of my God. Over and above everything, I have provided for this holy temple. What are you prepared to give to God and his service? You hear some evangelists, some gospel people saying, become a Christian, it costs you nothing. Actually, in my youth, somebody added, it does cost you nothing to become a Christian. To live and be a Christian costs you everything. How much are you prepared to give? Duncan Bannatyne was not prepared for that. Not prepared to give what was necessary. What are you prepared to give? And so we finish with these three questions. Thank you. We finish with these three questions. Firstly, are you saved? Have you been redeemed? Is your name written in the scroll of remembrance or the Lamb's Book of Life? If it is, then know this, that you are God's treasured possession. You really are God's treasured possession. Do you know what it is to be treasured? I'm sure some of you will remember your mothers when you were little calling you my little treasure. Or perhaps you've done the same. You who are mothers have called your children, my little treasures. God calls you and me his treasured possession. Are you saved? Question two, what is your treasured possession? And are you prepared and willing to give it to God? And question three, how do you rate as a royal priest, as a declarer of the wondrous deeds of the one who gave you the calling? May God bless these words to us.
Do you want me to take down the spots or you can...
Perhaps God has spoken to you. Perhaps you feel you'd... Perhaps, maybe you've never actually made the first commitment of prayer. Maybe you have, but never properly committed yourself and your stuff. Maybe you've fallen short of being a royal priest. If you need someone to pray for, I would suggest you do it now. I'm not going to ask for show of hands. But I just would pray you do it now. If you'd like someone to pray with you afterwards, do come forward. There'll be some of us here ready and waiting to pray with you. If you would like prayer, like someone to help you pray with you, do come forward. Do not leave this moment. Do not say no to God. God will say okay and walk away.